Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It is Tour Live. It's Neil Atkinson joined by Emma Sanders, John Gibbons and Stievo to take a long look back at Liverpool's game against Glasgow Rangers, but much more than that, a big look forward to Sunday, to the game you look out for when the fixture list drops. You don't expect it to be quite like it is, as the manager has discussed today in his press conference. It was about the only interesting thing he said in his press conference, if we're all honest about it. He shut everything down, but we'll come on to talk about that as well with Steve, with Emma and with John. We've got other bits and pieces as well coming up over the course of today's Tour Live. We have got Harriet Pryor speaking to Claire McColgan from Culture Liverpool about Liverpool hosting Eurovision in 2022, and John Gibbons speaking to our friend Kelly Forshaw, one of the better living Evertonians, about running the London Marathon for the British Heart Foundation. All of that is to come. If you listen to this as a podcast, if it is alive for you, thank you very much for coming and joining us today as we look ahead to this game against Manchester City. Get your comments in. We might go through them as it wears on. But the first thing, John Gibbons, is to talk about Liverpool's performance against Glasgow Rangers. They were, I thought, pretty rubbish and then really, really, really good. I would like more of pot two moving forward, if possible.
Yeah, it was funny, wasn't it? Because sort of the way they set up and how they were playing was so sort of jointly workmanlike, sorry, that I was a bit worried that, you know, we'd sort of reduced us down to their level a little bit. And, you know, there's the old Jürgen quote from when he first joined about, you know, we'll drag them down to their level and then beat them. It felt like we jumped down with sort of how we set up, but how we were going to play. And then something clicked second half and they looked a different team. I don't know if there was, you know, tweaks to the formation or what they were asking them to do or what, but they looked a lot more fluid. I thought, you know, the first half, how they were set up and what they were trying to do was just sort of all very basic and ALS, really, whereas second half, I thought we looked to get Elliott and Cavallo onto the ball more in more intelligent positions. You know, I thought, you know, suddenly, you know, what we asking tougher questions, and we just looked like a more quality team in both what we were trying to do and how we were executing it as well. And yeah, it was great fun in the ground. It was great fun to be there as the goals were raining. I mean, mate, they were kicking towards us second half, so maybe they were just waiting for that. We'll score all our goals in front of the lads and lasses in red. And if that does the plan, then fair play, because we got loads.
We did indeed get loads, Steve. It's obviously there's two quite significant turning points, I think. Obviously, there's the moment Liverpool make it 1-1, and then there's the moment Liverpool make it 2-1. And it's why, you know, it is worth discussing the all-round contribution of Roberto Firmino, but also the literal stick the ball into the back of the net contribution of Roberto Firmino. It's a really good ball in from Gomez. It's a pretty good ball in from Shimakas. It's just dreadfully defended. You know, they're sort of on a plate for him, but you've still got to tuck it away when it's on a plate. And we've seen throughout his Liverpool career, sometimes Firmino doesn't do that. He does do that today on Wednesday night against Rangers.
Yeah, I thought the second goal was fantastic, especially from Joe Gomez. The ball across the behind the defenders. It was just, you could see it coming from a mile away, but then it still seemed impossible to defend. Really, the ball was that good. But I was very impressed with his first. I think it's underrated. His header for the first, because I think he's very strong, gets himself into a good position. He's kind of got two around him, but still manages to get his head and turn it into the Rangers goal. Maybe takes a slight deflection off one of theirs as well, but that was definitely a turning point, because we weren't great first half, as you say, and it kind of, after that goal went in, we kind of gained the momentum from Rangers. They kind of started to blow a little bit, and obviously then we managed to kick on from there, really. But I think, you know, it certainly was a pivotal moment, especially to get him back into the game after a pretty poor start yet again, really. So the manager would be pleased with that, and then pleased that we managed to kick on again second half, which we haven't done many times this season. We've our crisis management has been great, but I think half time the manager had his best half time of the season probably, and got us ticking, and obviously the rest was pretty easy.
Pretty easy, Emma, but it was also marked by great finishing, like really, really good finishing. I keep going back to the game we have against Bournemouth where, you know, they score nine, but three of them come from set pieces. Another one's an own goal. Another one's a 30-yarder. You know, I'm not against 30-yarders. I'm not against own goals. But the point is that the...
Take one of each of the weekend.
Yeah, I would take one of each of the weekend. But the point is that to see great finishing is actually what does... I couldn't believe, you work for the BBC. I couldn't believe how much Fran Bronckhorst had to pay for this. They seem to be flogging him all over the place, whereas there must be part of him saying it doesn't help when they finish like that.
Yeah, I think that was probably the most pleasing thing for me, was that Liverpool, in terms of going forward, just had that clinical, ruthless edge in the second half, which we haven't seen all season. As you said, you know, when they have scored, it hasn't been the types of goals that we've seen them score frequently under Jurgen Klopp. And I think the likes of Roberto Firmino being in good form again, obviously Salah coming on and scoring that really quick hat-trick, he played like he was a bit angry, actually, that he wasn't starting. And that's what you want, I think, from your front players. And yeah, just to show that type of quality, as Gibbo sort of said before, I think there was a lot of basics being done in the first half. And I can understand that, because when things haven't really gone very well, you think, oh, I'll go back to basics and just kind of nail the basics and go from there. And I think that was what we saw in the second half, was once they'd sort of settled down a little bit and realised, actually, yeah, we can still play football. They played with a bit more freedom and played with a bit more confidence, and then that's when their quality came through and those really good finishes.
When you just talk about them playing with a bit more freedom and the quality of the finishes, but obviously you go 3-1 and you know, well, with the exception of Liverpool this season, you can have a level of confidence that Rangers aren't going to get to and claw the way back into it. And I think that does help them. But you've still got to then go and do it. And I think that's, for me, the main thing about the finishes. And we've all got one eye on the weekend. You know, when they beat Bournemouth 9-0, Salah doesn't even score. For me, this feels like a little bit one of those things where if there is confidence to be taken into the weekend, hitting the postage stamp, hitting the inside of the post, hitting the area where it's so difficult for the goalkeeper. I don't think the goalkeeper covers himself in glory, but where it's so difficult for the goalkeeper, that's a massive positive.
Yeah, it is a massive positive. And especially when your defence is struggling at the moment, which, you know, there's no beating around the bush. Everyone knows that defensively, Liverpool are just, you know, they're giving away goals. So when you have world-class players like Salah up front, you need to rely on him, really, to just make sure that one job is done at the other end of the pitch. So, yeah, going into a game like City, I don't think any players, as much as they like to say, oh, we think about it game by game, in the second half of that Rangers game when they were, as you say, kind of, you know, comfortably in the lead, there's no way that they weren't thinking, we need to try and really put down a bit of a statement now before going into the weekend, because everyone was already looking ahead to City and thinking, what can they take from that Rangers performance? And that second half, certainly a lot of positives.
It's probably Steve Elliott's best 45 for Liverpool. I think he put together what we've seen, I think, in patches, going all the way back to the start of last season, where you've seen him have a really good 10, you've seen him have a decent 15. I think he pulls himself out of the doldrums well as a footballer. But I think you've seen it. I think that was the most sort of put together an entire 45 was. As I say, I think they were fatigued. I think the reality of what they were dealing with hit them. I think the idea of this is happening to us in front of our own fans hit them. Don't get me wrong. But you've still got to have that ability to put those teams to the sword. And I think he showed that repeatedly. And I was really pleased he got his goal.
Yeah, very much deserved. I agree with you. I think it was definitely his best 45 he's had for us. I imagine he might have got not a bit of a rocket at half time, but just a bit of... Jürgen pulled up his side and said, listen, you've got so much ability. I want you to be more aggressive with the ball. I want you to believe, be more sort of attacking and trying to go past players, just one little 1-2s around the edge of the box. And I think a lot of that has been down to his position, playing that sort of right side of the centre midfield so far this season. And maybe he's just been concentrating on just getting it and giving it, recovering it, just trying to recycle the ball out to Salah. But the way he kind of hugged the touchline, proper old-fashioned choke on his boots to that winger and just looked to cut inside. But I thought he was fantastic. I thought Cavalio, again, similarly, I thought he was much, much better second half. Again, this could be down to them being tired, but certainly Elliot It's exactly the kind of stuff I want to see from Harvey Elliott. It's the stuff that he's good at, going past players, little balls around the corner, you know, and just always keep him moving and always looking like a constant threat around the edge of that box and coming in from the wing. And as you say, deservedly got his goal. I thought he was excellent for that 45.
They find themselves up against that Rangers side. It was interesting to me, John. I know you got to see it in the grounds because they cruelly put it on the big screen of the Rangers supporters streaming out. It is worth remarking on it is the biggest ever defeat they've suffered at Ibrox. Again, this is the sort of stuff that Liverpool used to do, and this season has sort of stopped. And I don't mean this in a cruel way. Like, I think it can restart, and I think it will restart. But that idea of, well, no side's ever took a beating as bad as this at this stage of this tournament, this sort of thing's not happened before. And even the fans streaming out to the ground was a bit of a reminder of last season and Old Trafford and all that sort of stuff as well. My point is, you can overstate, maybe as we all did after the Bournemouth 9-0, what this sort of thing does. But I think you can also be in danger of understating it as well. And because we've been burned a few times before, and because it's Manchester City next, we've got to be careful maybe not to understate how this could kickstart certainly some confidence in front of goal.
You'd hope so, yeah. And I think it is a fair point to make that, you know, this is that's a characteristic of the Liverpool side, that the record breakers and they've put on some, you know, phenomenal scorelines against some good sides. You wouldn't necessarily classify Rangers as that, but then I think they have been, you know, a touch slighted, really, considering that they got to Europa League Cup final last year and they qualified this year by knocking PSV out. And so I think, you know, listen, they're not brilliant, and Manchester City, you know, are going to be a much, much tougher task. But I think Wednesday showed, and what, you know, things like Bournemouth showed, and a few other times as well, that when we've got a bit of backwind and things are sort of going for us, we can really turn it on. The worry for this Liverpool team is that, you know, how are they when the chips are down? How are they when things are against them? How are they when, you know, at the weekend when City are going to have some pressure, which they will, no matter how well we play, City are going to have a period when they're on top. How are we going to cope with that? That's what they haven't proved yet this season. What they've done, you know, against Rangers is reiterate what a devastating attacking side we can be, how many quality players we've got, how many goal scorers we've got, and how threatening we can be. But what they need to show next is the resilience, is that when it's tough, you know, how can we start a game and shut it down? How can we shut down space? How can we cope with the fact that a really good team like City are going to have time on the ball, you know, and hurt us in ways that sides like Rangers just can't, and deal with that? That's what you want to see next. That's when we know the real Liverpool are back.
It will be when we know the real Liverpool are back, and we'll see the way in which that goes, Steve, on Sunday. Just one more sort of thing to wrap up this one. I thought that for the first time, I would argue possibly, and since last February, I mean, even when Liverpool were getting really good results and playing well, I felt for the first time really, it may actually be the League Cup final, Fabinho looked himself. I thought he looked physically where you want him to be, but also he looked like he was passing forwards, and not passing forwards aimlessly, passing forwards with certainty. I was really pleased to see Fabinho's performance. It's one of my big takeaways from the game, really, and that included when it was 1-1, when it was 2-1, I was thinking, you know what, Fabinho's playing well here, and it's nice to see.
Yeah, he grew into the game really well. I thought he's been a real worry for me this season. He's been one of my, you know, one of our most consistent players over the past three or four seasons in this Klopp era. When we've been successful, he's been one of the main driving forces behind that. Sometimes unsung, obviously, the likes of Van Dijk and Salah get a lot of plaudits, but I think Fabinho, when he's been playing really well, has been a massive factor in us as being successful. So this season, when he's clearly not really being himself. I think he's looked knackered, if I'm looking honest. I think, and that doesn't help with the formation setup. He's kind of been isolated a few times, and he looks a bit pissed off with it and fed up with it at times as well. But I think you're right. I think against Rangers, he looked a little bit more like himself. He's fantastic with the ball at his feet. He's really underrated in that area. I think not only breaking plays down, but passing around the corners.
He's been choosing not to do it, Steve. That's one of the things that's been frustrating me. Yeah, and that's what's been frustrating me. It's not the idea of whether he's been doing it well or doing it badly. It's been that he's not doing it.
Yeah, yeah. He really looked like he wants to be part of the team on Wednesday. For me, I thought he really looked like he was in a different headspace almost. Really, just by the way he was sort of driving himself forward and not getting too down on himself. Maybe that's the secret to it all. You know, he just needs to start believing himself a bit more and start doing what he's good at, as you're saying. And I think we'll see a lot more of what he's really good at, which is what makes him one of the best in the world in that position when he's on form.
Two fullbacks worth note over the course of the game. Emma Gomez, it's a great ball for the Firmino goal to make it 2-1, and he plays a really good one just before there as well to Nunez, that Nunez can't quite get under the spell the way you'd like. Robertson comes on and immediately looks like he makes a massive difference as well, and he's part of things. Gomez first and foremost, though, it was important for him to get a bit of quality right back time under his belt before possibly having to go into the game. Well, definitely having to go into the game against City and play there, you would have expected. And I think he's underrated what he can do going forward. He's just not going to be Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Yeah, I think that's the key. Just firstly on Robertson, I think when he's missing, that's when you actually realise how big of a step up Robertson probably is to Kostas, because look, it's, you know, Kostas is a good player, and when he's on it, he can be, you know, near to that level of Robertson, but consistently Robertson is just for me a level above, and I think now that Liverpool have missed him, you've really seen that. Gomez, as you say, I think it was really important for him to come on, and actually I think he's really struggled of late defensively. One of several players who struggled defensively, but it was good to see him come on and have a few nice touches and impact the game going forward, as you say, because that's something which obviously without Trent, any team in the world is going to miss someone like Trent in their team going forward, and you know, just in terms of the way that the team set up. So to have Joe Gomez sort of show that he is capable of adding at least some of those elements is only a good thing. I'd like to see him get on the ball a bit more when he's in that position on Sunday. I know it's going to be difficult, especially playing against a team like City, and Liverpool aren't. I don't think Liverpool will have the ball as often as they probably would have liked. A mixture of things. I think City they seem to dominate teams even more now, but also just, you know, that slight lack of confidence in the Liverpool team. I just think City might take the ball a little bit more. So I think when Gomez does have it, that transition between those sort of wide fullback areas, I think, is going to be really important.
I think it's going to be important because one of the things that we've done well against City, John, is actually shift the ball from one side of the pitch to the other. We've lost a piece of that armoury, I think it's fair to say, with Trent up against City. But one of the things I think you saw from Gomez, and as he settled as the game wore on more and more, as Liverpool grew more confident, was he was quite happy being quite vertical with it. And that's something that Trent does really well. And Trent is a genius. Some of how Trent goes vertical with it, the ball to Jota, for instance, for the Arsenal League Cup second goal last season, is an incredible thing to do. But there is also something else to point out, that you can go vertical with it in a bit of an uncomplicated way if need be. And I think simplifying things in that position for Gomez, I think, really helps him, because he is technically a really good footballer. He's one of the best centre-halves I've ever seen technically when he's playing well, when he's on it. You know, it's not too much to translate bits of that to right back. And he passes forward with aplomb when he's on it at centre-half, I think.
It does, yeah. And what I think is important for this game as well is that we're not throwing him cold. I think when Joe Gomez struggles, is that suddenly when Trent's fit and he's going to come in for the odd game here and there, and maybe he's been doing a bit of centre-half, and you're like, oh, well, you go right back here to give Trent a rest. And he's almost, sometimes you're watching him and trying to almost learn how to play the position again. And so what am I sort of meant to be doing here? And, you know, there's no instinct there.
It's a hard position to play because you've got, basically, you know, you're in the middle of the pitch, you've got 180 degrees in front of you to some degree. As soon as you're on a touchline, you know, they are markedly different positions. You've cut half your, well, the touchline cuts half your options out.
And especially when, you know, it's not just, you know, you getting thrown in cold, but for your teammates as well. They're like, I'm used to this guy who, as you say, he gets the ball and does 60-yard switches. But instead, I've sort of got a show for it or whatever. And so I think it's important for us and it's good for him going into this weekend that he has had a bit of a run. Like you both have said, I thought he played well against Rangers. I think he shows, you know, it's his pace as much as the quality of delivery that I really like. The fact that he can get up the pitch there and hurt the opposition. I agree with you, Neil. I think technically he's good. And I think when he's in a bit of a rhythm there and he can pick his passes and he knows, you know, he knows his options, you know, he knows, you know, who's down the line for him, who he can sort of cut inside for, and he is calm on the ball, is what you'd say as well. And so, you know, I'm not too worried about him at the weekend, really. I'd love to have Trent there because, like you say, Neil, it's another thing that can hurt Manchester City, and you sort of, you know, you wish you'd be going in with all the weapons at your disposal. But from a defensive point of view and from a point of view of getting us going, I think you'd be fine.
It is Tour Live. I am Neil Atkinson. I'm joined by Steve Evans, by John Gibbons, and by Emma Sanders. And they will be back, if you're listening to this as a podcast, in a few minutes after Harriet Pryor has spoken to Claire McColgan from Culture Liverpool about Eurovision. And John Gibbons has spoken to Kelly Forshaw about running the London Marathon for the British Heart Foundation. So we'll go over and we will listen to them for a few minutes. And we'll be back to talk about the game against Manchester City as a podcast.
And it's John Gibbons and Neil Atkinson with another read-through, courtesy of Green King. Green King have partnered us at the start of the season. We really appreciate that, and it is your home of pub sport with over 900 sports pubs across the country. Green King is where the fans go, showing every broadcast game for Liverpool. So every live sports event for BT and Sky Sports on tap. If you download the Green King season ticket app, that is the Green King season ticket app, you're going to receive a free drink when you register and 10% off a great range of drinks 1 hour before, during and after any match. And also, if you use the code AnfieldRat when prompted, so I've done it, you get a few things to fill in, name and stuff like that, nothing too strenuous, there will be a promotion code prompt. If you put in Anfield Rap, that's one word, all capitals, Anfield Rap, one word, all capitals, as a listener of this show, you'll get an additional £5 off when you spend £15 on drinks. Neil, we are pro Green King.
Yeah, do you know, so I've looked up Green King pubs off the back of doing all of this.
Yeah.
One that stands out to me is a pub that you and I both watched the game, and possibly before we even knew each other, or certainly knew each other in real life, but we may well have been in for the same football match at the same time, as the Willowbank.
Yes.
On Smith Town.
Yeah, it's a really nice pub, and it is there on the season ticket app.
It is.
So you get stuck in. Yeah, no, it is really good.
I've had a go on the app and had a little look, and I was like, oh, maybe the Willowbank, you know, just off the basis of justifications of, you know, remembrance of times past. But I went to go in there and remember being 26. Knocking around the Willowbank. I think I saw Fernando Torres, maybe the game away at Sunderland where Torres drills one in.
Yeah.
I think I watched that at the Willowbank.
Got a really good outside screen at the front as well, which is fun, like on a summer's day, but is always slightly distracting driving down Smith Town. You're like, how are United getting on in Europa League? Do you know what I mean? Next thing you know, you've got to slam on because you've nearly got into a bus. But no, it is a good thing. Yeah, Willowbank's on there. There's obviously the Mersey Clipper as well, which is called the best tree on this. You've got to watch out.
Oh, really?
I think it's a bit, I don't know if it's in its official name, business or what. It also comes up when you pay on your card. It comes up with Birch Tree.
I did not know that. I wasn't aware of that.
So when we talk about the Mersey Clipper and you can't find it, it is the Birch Tree on there. But it is a really good pub to watch the sports. We mentioned the Mersey Clipper there, which is right by Prenton Park, that me and Neil will be going over to a week Sunday for that Arsenal game. But if this Sunday you're looking for somewhere to watch the Liverpool Man City game, then you could do a lot worse and you could save yourself a few quid with the season ticket app as well. So download the app, it'll tell you the nearest ones closer to you.
Birky in the Embus by ours.
There you go, that's on there as well. It'll tell you the nearest one closer to you, but like I say, you'll get the free drink when you register, 10% off a great range of drinks 1 hour before, during and after the match, and also with the code Anfield Rap on the promotion code when prompted, an extra £5 off when you spend £15 on drinks. So not bad at all. A nice one to Green King for partnering with us. It's where the fans go, your home of pub sports.
Hello, I'm delighted to be joined by the Director of Culture for Liverpool City Council, Claire McColgan. First of all, thank you for coming on, and huge congratulations for the amazing news that Eurovision is coming to Liverpool. You must be very tired and exhausted, but thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh no, I'm made up to be here. You know, it's sinking in now. So what day are we on now? Actually, I don't know what day it is, so maybe it's not sinking in. So we're on Wednesday. So yeah, it's sinking in now, but yeah, obviously really delighted, but started work on it, so exhausted.
How did it feel that moment that it was confirmed? Because we were all watching on the One Show and the delight in the city was palpable. But how did it feel for you personally, having worked on it?
Well, I'm really bad at things like this because I did Capital Culture as well. So I always work on the premise that we're not going to get it. So, but I convinced myself and the team so much that we hadn't got it for lots of reasons. But because obviously we were the underdog all the way through the kind of competition. So, yeah, I'd convinced myself that we hadn't got it. So it was quite odd because it took like, even when they announced it, I went, is this a mistake? In my head, I was thinking, maybe they've got it wrong. Maybe they're going to tell us in a minute that it's Glasgow's and it's wrong and that's that. And then all night, it felt really weird and really didn't sink in. And then it was only kind of, it's probably only actually on Monday when we started working on it. You think, oh, actually, we did do it. But what's been incredible is, what I love about Liverpool is the kind of whole outpouring of people just being delighted for the city on it. You know, I came home, there was two bottles of wine on my step. It's just lovely. And that's why you do these things, because in cities like Liverpool, you'll know that through sport and through football, the passion here, I don't think there is anything like it anywhere in the world, actually. And Eurovision has just felt like that. It's felt like that really big win for the city. And it was 20 other cities that we bid against. So it was a really tough competition. It was a really, really, really tough competition. So to get to host it, it will just be joyous here. You know, it really will be in May. And we need that. We need that as a city. We need those kind of big moments where the world looks back on us again and goes, oh yeah, Liverpool. So I'm absolutely delighted.
Did you find out the same time we all did, or did you have a bit of an advance warning?
We found out in the Cunard building. It wasn't, you know, but it's really odd with things like that, because it just doesn't matter until they read the name. Do you know what I mean? Because they read the name and you think, it could still be, there's a mistake, you know, they just got to read the name and say it's you, and then it kind of does start to sink in. But we sent everyone home. The poor team who worked on the bid, they were all in their houses texting me, going, we did get it. We're celebrating by ourselves rather than all celebrating together. So I felt a bit mean. But yeah, it was a great moment. It was a great moment for the city. And when I came out of the Cunard building, which is where BME is, the church bells were all ringing. I don't know if that was a coincidence or not, but I just got really emotional. I just thought it just felt like the city had done a massive whole jump together. It was great.
Talk us through that pitching process. And you mentioned all the different cities that bid for it. So what was the process like? How did you have to sort of put your name in the hat, and how was that process of pitching and eventually getting it?
So what was really odd is I do like Eurovision, but I'm not a super fan, and there are lots of super fans around. So if anyone's listening to this who is a super fan, you know, I do apologise. So I don't really know how Eurovision actually works. Oh, I didn't at the time. I absolutely obviously do now. So at the time when it was on, I was watching it, and I just, Sam Ryder was doing really well, wasn't he? And I just thought, oh God, he might win this. And then I thought, no, Ukraine are going to win. But I thought, Sam Ryder's just done brilliantly. So I text, I can't remember who texted who, but I either text Harry Doyle, who's the cabinet member, who is a proper Eurovision fan, or I text him. I can't remember which way around it was, but we should bid for this if it comes to the UK. So that was on the night. And then obviously, you know, Ukraine, we're going to host it. So we kind of moved on from that. And then there was lots of rumblings that unfortunately, you know, Ukraine couldn't host it and that it was going to go to the UK. And then I kind of was just like, we have got to go for this. This is like one of those big mega events that feels so Liverpool. It's such a Liverpool thing. And the added layer of kind of the relationship with Ukraine and what's happening in Ukraine and us being a city that is absolutely caring and compassionate, I just think it fitted Liverpool so well. So, yeah, we went for it full on, like absolutely. But we were always the underdog. I mean, in the first round, no one even talked about Liverpool kind of even getting through, which I just found really shocking, actually. But we were steely. And I never use that word really, really, because we literally were tunnel vision on it. And we learned, you know, Robin Kemp, who deserves every single credit, who led the whole process. The two of us have worked together for a very, very long time. And with him and Pip, who were the three of us that worked on it, we've been through quite a lot of bidding processes before. So you kind of know what works and what doesn't work. But I think what swung it for Liverpool is the fact that we do big events really well. We did the parade with you just only, you know, when was that? That was last, not even 6 months ago, was it? And that passed without an absolute incident. I mean, it was gorgeous, the parade. So all those kind of big things that we've done really made us the candidate that won it. But it was a really, really, really hard process. I've never gone through a process like it. It was really technical, is the word I'd use. Lots of maths.
Lots of logistical information. Lots of probably. You just wanted to have a big party and you had to include all of the maths and how it would all work in reality.
Well, yeah, I mean, the party stuff is great. But I wanted, you know, I'm really keen because when we did European Capital Culture years ago, European Capital Culture was a marketing exercise, really, at that point in time. So 20 years ago, when people were bidding for it, it was seen as a way to kind of just market your city. And we did something very different with European Capital Culture. We did a whole community and education program, and we made it about the kind of reemergence of a city, if that makes sense, because we were going through a really bad time at that point. And we wanted it to make sure that it did impact on communities, it did impact on investment, it impacted on regeneration. And no one had quite done that. And we treated Eurovision the same in the bidding process. So even though it's a much shorter period of time, because it's only 7 months, it's kind of what we do with it as a city region to make sure that when the eyes of the world are on us, that we have you know, an investment opportunity for people to come and say, actually, that's the city I want to go to. That's the region I want to go to. So all those different layers we brought to this bidding process. And I kind of think that probably made us a bit unique, because it's not usual. You know, Eurovision comes into a city, takes over it, creates a massive big bang of kind of economic impact. All hotels are full, all, you know, everything goes bonkers, and then it moves on. But I really want a legacy from it. And that's what we've done with European Capital Culture. So I think that might have been a big difference with our bid as well. Obviously, we haven't seen the other 20 bids, so I don't really know. I'm making that up.
No, but you touched on there the impact that it's going to have on the city. I want to, you know, you've spoken about all the hard work that's gone into the bid. So what do the next 7 months look like for you as a team? Is it just constant planning and making sure that this event is the best it can be, so that when the eyes of the world are on the city, it is shone in such a good light, which I'm sure you'll do?
Yeah, and it's an odd thing because we're bidding to host Eurovision. We're not doing Eurovision. So I think we need to be really clear about that, because the EBU, the event broadcasting union, and the BBC, they put on Eurovision. You know, that is their thing, and they are the best in the world. I mean, they are the best. They are just amazing at what they do. So the show will be great. All the work that they do around the city, so it splits. And so there's four people in the relationship, if you like. There's ourselves, the host city. There's the EBU. And then there's the BBC, and then there's national government. So we're not doing this alone. It's not like European Capital Culture or Giants. We're not doing it alone. So it's similar, I guess, to the parade, where we worked in partnership with LFC to do the parade. That was a relationship. So this is a relationship. So I'm not as worried about delivering it at all, actually. I'm really excited about getting it done. I don't want it to end, and it feels very short time. So 7 months feels like we'll blink and it'll be, you know, it'll be May and it'll be over. And I just kind of wanted to go on. I want the preparations to go on a bit longer, I think. But it won't just be us delivering. So I'm very confident in our partners as well.
Yeah. And I think it will have almost a festival feel around Liverpool. Will there be other events going on and other things that you look to hold during that time that Eurovision is here and all the
millions of tours? We are milking it for every single thing we can. But look, it's not just us. I mean, I had a really lovely email from the cathedral yesterday who wants to do something really big around Ukraine and around hope, so that people will go to the cathedral when we're here. Because you've got to remember, which I didn't know, that people come for like a month. So they'll start arriving kind of at Easter, and they stay and they go. It's real loads of super fans. But I think this is different as well because of the Ukrainian part of it. I think people want to come and see a lot of Ukrainian culture in Liverpool. There'll be lots of exhibitions. All the cultural organisations will be thinking now about what they're doing. So there'll be a whole load of stuff. They're really interested in sport, for example. Our sister city, Odessa, has got a real passion for football. So could we do something around the football? So there's a whole load of stuff that people just need to start thinking of now and planning. And I'm hoping that people will have street parties and flags in their windows and all of that stuff that Liverpool does really, really, really well. But kind of this is a chance for everyone to just celebrate in the way they want to. I don't want to be too prescriptive over it either, because everyone can just start planning now and just do something brilliant for that time, because you will have every single hotel. You know, the city will be like Aintree for a month. So people should just be going now, right, what am I doing in my bar, in my restaurant? You know, how am I theming it? What am I going to do? Because people will travel. People will travel and they will stay in the city for a long time.
We should all put the month off work then, is what you're saying. We should.
Well, I will. I'll be working.
You'll be working. Yeah. You have to work. We'll all put the month off. I'll ask John later. You have mentioned you're hosting on behalf of Ukraine. And I think one of the reasons you mentioned that Liverpool is such a good place to host on behalf of Ukraine is because we are such a compassionate and welcoming city. But you mentioned there are a few things you're going to do, but are you really going to look to honour them throughout the event and things that are going on in the city?
Absolutely. I mean, it's not just our priority, it's the BBC's priority, and it is the EBU's priority, and it's government's priority. So we are hosting this on behalf of Ukraine. So that is very, very clear. It's been very clear all the way through. And it's one of the reasons why we wanted to get this as well, because we just think that Liverpool will do that relationship proud, actually. So the next month or two months really before Christmas is kind of starting to plan what that will look like. So it will be like hopefully a load of cultural commissions with Ukrainian artists and Liverpool artists. It could be football stuff. You know, they're very keen on that. It could be delegations coming over. It could be schools matching with schools. It could be community groups deciding to engage with a similar community group in Ukraine. But then it's also the UK as well. So there's a whole it's as big as we make it, actually, and as big as people want to make it. But that is the absolute priority for this, because it's not Liverpool winning Eurovision and just doing a party. It's Liverpool hosting a party for someone else who's actually at war. So we've got to kind of get that absolutely right tonally, but also practically, to make sure that we are doing what we said we do. But then that's everyone's priority. So I'm not worried about that. I think the opportunities to show that really brilliant Scouse welcome, but also that kind of creativity and that compassion, then that's one of the reasons why we will have won it.
Yeah, we can't wait to have it in the city. I think we'll have to catch up a bit close to the time when everything's a bit more, plans are in place, and we can see what we can all have to look forward to. I can't wait for it to be here. Claire, thank you so much for coming on. I know you're very, very busy. I know you're probably running into work now to continue the planning on it, so we really appreciate it, and we will definitely catch up nearer to the time. And once again, a huge congratulations.
Oh, thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
John Gibbons and Neil Atkinson with Insert, courtesy of Harry's. Harry's have backed us for a long time now, and we do appreciate it. And we also appreciate Neil with a lovely razors coming the post. It's a first-class shave, not to be denied.
I've got a Harry's story.
Oh, brilliant.
So when we flew to Chicago, me and Brock, I packed me case. And because we were checking luggage, obviously I put all toiletries in the case. And I'm not going to name the airline because I don't want to feel like the person who argues about this sort of thing with airlines via other means. It's fine, you know, stuff happens. Airports are a mess at the minute, full stop, in every single way. But anyway, the case got lost. So we had to go and buy alternative bits and pieces. So the positive was there was some Harry's shave lotion in the Target we went to in Chicago. That was great. But I didn't feel like, because I had the Harry's razor in the case, I thought I'll just buy a couple of normal razors, like cheap disposable ones. Just nowhere near as good.
Yeah.
That's the truth of the matter. Absolutely nowhere near as good. But I did manage to buy the lotion, so that was good news. So yeah, then when we got the bag and the bags returned, and suddenly, you know, quality of shave went up markedly. I'd literally noticed the difference. Trial and error, customer, you know, I discovered the difference. So yeah, very team Harry's at the moment, off the back of a lost luggage experience, which also happened to be coming back as well. But we'll gloss over that one too.
Okay. If you want to join Neil Atkinson with the nice shaver, not Neil Atkinson with the cheap replacements, you can start a trial, which will cost you £0. You just pay the postage. In this trial set, you get the expertly engineered weighted handle that Neil missed in his hand when he did not have it. 1 5-blade cartridge, crafted by artisans in their own German factory, complete with precision.
There's only like two blades on this thing I bought.
What is the point?
Yeah.
What are they even doing? We're wasting
working too hard. The two blades.
The handy foaming shave gel for effective lubrication that Neil did manage to pick up, and I will maintain, is the best one I've used.
And yes,
it is. And the travel bay cover for life's adventures. So there we go. Also, for our listeners, you get a free hydrating night lotion. So that is a free hydrating night lotion. I think it was a shower gel at one point. Now they go for a light night lotion. So there we are. So to get all that, if you go to harrys.com/wrap, harrys.com/wrap, get stuck in. As I say, you only pay the £3.95 postage. Everyone else is free for your future child set. That is up to you. But like me and Neil say, you won't regret it.
KLM.
It's John Gibbons for Tour Live, joined in the studio by athlete, friend of yours, friend of mine, Kelly Forshaw. Kelly, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, John.
And we're here to talk about you conquering the London Marathon.
I don't think I conquered it, but
you
I completed
did it. Yeah,
I
completed it. Yeah. So how are you feeling since then? How do you sort of reflect on the whole experience?
Do you know what? I feel much better now. Obviously, it's been a week since I did it, and immediately after, the first thing I said was never again. Like, and why would these crazy people? I was looking around at all the other people who'd ran it, and I just thought, what were these people thinking, like running this?
But you're one of them.
I know, but I was like, it was much more difficult than I thought it was going to be. And I'd trained like quite a bit for it, like. Me and my boyfriends, we had trained for it, but I think I just, in my head, I'd underestimated still, like, how difficult it would be. Like, I think the most I'd ran before it was 20 miles, and it was fine. I was like, you know what? Like, I can run 20 miles, I can run 26.
Yeah, the adrenaline on the day and stuff like that,
But I was fuming, because I think people had said to me, oh, like, you know, the crowds get you through. It's such a boss atmosphere. So in my head, the crowds were going to, like, remove any pain that I had felt when I was running, which was not the case. When I was running, I was looking at all these people cheering, like, this is not helping.
Shut up.
Yeah. And it was, yeah, it was really, really difficult by the end. I was like, there was like tears streaming down my face. Like, the last 3 miles were the hardest.
Really?
Yeah, like, really difficult. But it made me, like, just give me so much more respect for people who I've done it, because I like to think I'm, like, in kind of good shape generally.
Yeah, you're active, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm active, like, play sports and whatever. But there was people there who, they were just of all different ages. Obviously, I'm sure, like, you see them on the telly and, like, you just think, how the hell do you, you know, do it? Mm. But it is. I feel good. I feel proud that, like, it's, like, an accomplishment.
Yeah, it's fun to say you've done better.
I wouldn't say I'd never do it again. Like, immediately after, I was like, I couldn't be more certain, like, I will never put myself through this again. But now I'm like, do you know what? I probably would. I might do, but I don't know. I'm not, like, desperate to do it again now.
Did you feel part of, like, a big event? Because when you watch it on the telly, I've been down to watch my sister, and that even that was really cool, do you know what I mean? Just to sort of to watch, and we managed to get a few different points, but, you know, to run it, you must feel like you're part of something that's, like, really quite special when you're not dying.
It is, and I know it's, like, proper cheesy, but the thing that feels so special is seeing the different causes that people are, like, running for, and the kind of... that's what's obviously pushing people to push themselves to the limit. You've obviously got the athletes who are just unbelievable, like, machines.
Yeah.
You see them, like, coming around the corner, like, you know, an hour ahead of you or whatever it is, and you're just like, how is this humanly possible?
How are they running that fast when there's so much more to go? Yeah.
But then you see other people who are just really, like, they're in so much pain, and, you know, they've raised money, they've done, you know, for a cause that is obviously close to their heart. And that's what's inspirational, because you're like, wow, you know what I mean? You're really, like, pushing yourself to achieve something. So that's what's nice. It does feel like a nice big, you're part of a big thing. Yeah, like a big event. So
you mentioned causes. You were running for a charity. So let us know a little bit more about that.
So I was running for the British Heart Foundation. And when I'd, like, thought about, I was thinking, oh, like, I would quite like to run a marathon. But I think, for me, I did need something to motivate me to train, and I needed something
to get out on the cold mornings.
Get out of bed. I thought, I can't just do it just for the sake of doing it. And I thought, you know what? I thought about different charities, and there's so many amazing charities. You almost feel like, oh my gosh, like, well, how'd you choose a charity to run for? But the one that I chose was the British Heart Foundation. And it was mainly for two people, like, one, and for, like, two different reasons. So, like, one was me nan. She was, like, my favourite person in the world, and she'd had a heart attack when I was, like, 5 and, like, survived it. But I always think back and think, if she had died, like, I never would have known her, if you know what I mean? And she only died a couple of years ago, and she had, like, such an amazing, like, long, she was, like, late in her 80s. But I think, imagine if she'd have died when I was, like, I would not have
had that experience.
It blows my mind to think that sometimes. And then the other person was me business partner and, like, really close friends of mine who you know as well, Chris. He was born with a heart condition, and he was, like, a miracle baby. And it was mad because I'd known him, like, for such a long time, and I knew he had this heart condition, but it was, like, almost a bit of a joke.
Yeah.
Like, he'd say things like we'd be eating something and he'd go, oh, I can't eat that, that'll kill me, or something like that. Yeah. And I'd be like, what? And then he'd say, oh, I can't go on roller coasters. Or, oh, it was like a big joke.
Yeah.
And then I actually didn't realise how serious it was. And even, like, sometimes he would, like, be like, go to hospital appointments, and he would never, like, articulate just how serious these appointments were.
Yeah, it was sort of like he was always going to the doctors.
Yeah, he was just like, got a hospital appointment, oh, like, dead blasé. But then when you'd actually push him a couple of times, like, what was it? He'd say, oh, like, they have to, like, restart my heart and stuff. And you're like, what? Like, this is just not normal.
Yeah.
And then he but he passed away like during COVID, and it was as a result of this heart condition that he'd had, and it was just, he couldn't do anything, and it was like, it was so sad because he'd only been married a couple of years, and his whole family were devastated, we all were. But when I was at his funeral, like, his dad spoke about how when he was younger, he used to do so much like fundraising and stuff for like Alder Hey and stuff like that. And he benefited so much from other people's fundraising that, you know, his dad explained to him about it and how, as a result of other people's fundraising and the research and everything, it gave him that life. Do you know what I mean? And I think we're all so grateful that we had him. He was a miracle baby, and we're all so grateful that we got to know him and have so, like, you know, such good memories with him. And as devastating it was, like, he had so much more life to live, and that he was taken far, far too soon. I think it just made me think, do you know what? I feel like that's something that I can really be passionate about, and that would motivate me. And I said this, and this sounds proper cheesy, but when I was running and I was literally like, I felt like I couldn't take another step, and I still had like 5-6 miles to go. I just kept thinking, do you know what? Like, the pain that I'm feeling now is not even close to the pain that like Chris's wife's been through. Do you know what I mean? And like his family and so many other people who are also running it, who've had such tragic losses in their life, and that's what kept me going, to be honest. Like, when I was like really, really wanting to just stop, I just wanted to quit. But yeah, and then obviously, like, there's been the other thing that kept me going was people's donations, and like, I just thought to myself, people have donated, I cannot stop running now. Like, and so many like Anfield Rap listeners, because Neil, like, when I was doing a few AFQs, like, Neil mentioned it and you mentioned it, and like, it was genuinely like, I was so overwhelmed because I was like, these people like don't even know me.
My sister got a few from Anfield Rap people, and she was like blown away. She said, I will always tell if it's you because it comes through in dollars. It's like an American one or something.
I totally like American, and like loads of like anonymous, or loads of them were like, oh, I've listened to you on the Anfield Rap, and I just was like, wow, that is just, it makes you, it is, again, proper cheesy, but makes you think, wow, there's so many lovely people in the world that, you know, there's no reason why, you know, they should donate, or why, you know, especially like at this time when everyone is like worrying about money, you know what I mean, with stuff going on. So that definitely kept me going. So a massive thank you to the Anfield Rap listeners.
I feel a bit tight, only giving a tenner now. I might have to go back in. Times are hard for a few, Kel, you know what I mean? But if you want to donate more than me, you can go to Kelly's Twitter. It's Kelly for the number Shaw. So Kelly for as in the number, and then Shaw. And the pinned tweet, very helpfully, is Kelly looking all cool with the British Heart Foundation. Invest there as well. And yeah, there's links to the Just Giving page on there. So like Kelly said, you know, I mean, it's tough times for a lot of people at the moment, so this isn't to make anyone sort of, you know, feel bad or guilty. If you're struggling for money, then, you know, family comes first. But if you're able to support this fantastic charity and to put a smile on Kelly's face, then do that. Get on her Twitter. If you can't find her for whatever reason, just give me a shout and I'll pin you. I'll put you in the right direction. Just before you go, did anyone like a giraffe overtake you or anything like that, and you were like, oh, fuck off?
I was like, no, but it was so funny. So I got like the photos, and I'll probably like tweet it, but like, I got the photos, so you can put your number in and it'll automatically generate all the
photos.
So I was going through them, and I look like I'm just like in agony on everyone. And I was like, when did I go past Big Ben? I don't even remember that. And then
all these amazing sights, and you were just like grimacing.
I was just like, I couldn't see anything. And then I like found one, and there's like some massive armadillo in front of me. And I was like, that's the only photo. I look nice, but I'm not posting it because I feel ashamed that there's an armadillo or something in front of me. Yeah. I didn't even know what it was, but I just thought, how is that possible?
Some of them animals are quick, though, is what I would say. It was well-beckled attempts and all sorts of being sort of broken. Have you brought your medal in?
No. I'll send you food. I feel ashamed.
No, when Jack Hunter Spivey comes in, he always brings his medals. Admittedly, they're Olympic and Commonwealth Games medals, but still, we always like to see them.
Next time.
Next AFQ. We'll all have 10 minutes each wearing the medal.
Okay, yeah. We'll do that.
At Kelly Forshaw on Twitter, as I said before. Thanks for coming in and nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
But if this is Tour Live for you through any one of our variety of channels on this Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock, we've flitted immediately into Manchester City chat 1840. Andy, I'm saying for that one, you might decide a second or two earlier, but you know, you get the prerogative. He's gone 39, ladies and gentlemen. He's gone 39. He's -1 me.
I want to do a break just for the live chat and talk about one of the comments.
Which one of the comments do you want to do?
Can you get you able to go up
a
bit?
I can select them. Yeah.
It just made me laugh a bit. It was Tom Hanks. He's put I can't see it now. There we are.
It's for everyone there. Go on.
Rangers are the championship side. They literally ran out of legs. Salah will never get an easy hat trick. And we went one down to these lads. Trying to stay positive here, but City will kill us for pace. And what I would say, Tom, is you're not trying very hard.
Tom failed there, really.
Tom, I mean, if that isn't trying to stay positive, imagine what we'd be dealing with if he wasn't.
It just really made me smile. Like, fair play, do you know what I mean?
Tom, I've got to be honest with you, it's a long time from now until kickoff. You're gonna have to find something else. You're going to have to find more ways to do it. He is trying to stay positive, though. We're all trying to stay positive, Steve. We'll bring a couple more comments in as we begin to build up to City, because... You know, it is always, firstly, it's always a great game of football. One of the games of football I've most enjoyed in the last 5 years is the Community Shield against Manchester City. And one of the reasons why was because I didn't feel like everything in my whole existence rode on it. And I was able to therefore sort of take sucker from the quality of both sides. I don't just mean this from a Liverpool point of view. You know, they are some phenomenal footballers. And the good thing about the Charity Shield was it had everything as far as I was... It's the nearest thing I got to a test cricket match, really, in football, where there's tons of quality everywhere. I could appreciate it from both sides, but finally the team I wanted to win won. And that felt great as well. And I'm not saying it'll be like that on Sunday, because it won't quite be. But the one thing, the one saving grace for me psychologically, unlike for poor Tom there on Sunday, is that it doesn't feel like a league title's riding on it, because we're nowhere near the league title. So at least that pressure's gone.
Yeah, I mean, I'd take a performance like that for Liverpool again. We haven't seen it since, really. But, you know, we do go into this one massive underdogs for a change, I suppose. It's not been like that for the last 4 or 5 seasons. We've got in there on pretty much level playing fields, and it's been nip and tuck at the top of the league. So I suppose from that sense, the pressure's off us. So we can go into it after a decent week, a decent result midweek, albeit against, as Tom said, about absolute garbage, the Scottish side. But we can go into that with a bit of pressure off and just go in and do as well as we can. Even before the game midweek, I've always had a feeling in my bones that I fancied that we'll do quite well against City. I think it's one of them matches that we'll raise ourselves for. You know, as long as we don't give many early Christmas gifts like we have been doing recently with other teams. Given it soft goals, I'm pretty sure that we'll be able to match them, really. So, you know, I think if you look at the first half against Arsenal, I thought we were great for that sort of 35, 40 minutes as well. So if we can just kind of find that sort of shape and tempo of play again, listen, City are a fantastic side and they can punish you at any given moment. You know, but if we can just find that sort of form behind that first 35 against Arsenal, then I think we'll be okay and we'll give them a good game.
Michael Bennett's been on Gordon's lad, John. Need the atmosphere to be spot on Sunday. We're massively the underdogs in this game based on form season so far. Normally equates to a lively one. It feels a bit like the Chelsea rivalry this game. For me, the atmosphere is really interesting, and it's why we can't give gifts away, you know, because I think if we don't, then I think it'll be reminiscent of, he mentions there Chelsea, but the game that's been in my head is the 04-05 game against Arsenal, Benitez's first season when Alonso scores, where everything positive that happened got an enormous cheer from a Liverpool crowd. And you've got to be careful there. People sometimes go, have we sunk that low? It's not so much that, it's more the idea that these lads, they do need our help. And while I think they're showing that they're benefiting from our help, I hope they're going to get tons of it on Sunday.
Yeah, and I really like that Arsenal comparison, Neil, because we beat them on quality that day, and that's what we did. They were a really good Arsenal side. They came, I think, top of the league, or certainly higher than us, and we scored two fantastic goals to win the game. I mean, they scored a great goal as well.
Tremendous goal.
But I think, you know, it is... You know, that's what they can do. So it's not a case of, you know, backs against the wall, try and nick it from a corner. Again, I'd take it. But, you know, that's what we're talking here. We're talking, you know, big intensity. We're talking about, you know, getting more from our lads and less from theirs. And that's what atmosphere is all about for me. You know, it's not about, you know, persuading your mate to bring your drum or a bin from behind the house and smacking it all game, or drones from the crowd that don't change with what's going on in the pitch. The Anfield atmosphere is at its best when we're a live being, and that's what you want it to be on Sunday. You want it to be something that is influencing the game, that's changing by what is going on in the pitch, and is ultimately making our players play better and their players play worse. And City have felt that, and when City have felt it, they've struggled to live with it. So let's remember that. Let's remember those games. You know, you mentioned to me before upstairs, the 3-0, where a game they come on paper and the table says a much better side, but, you know, we managed to do enough collectively, us and them on the pitch, to sort of rattle them and to create a situation where suddenly they're 3-0 down and they're punch drunk and they don't know what's happened. And so, you know, there's a way of being an underdog stylishly. And that's what, you know, I think we'll want to be, because that's what the players, it suits the players as well. You want a game where we're coming out pairing about Thiago and not Kevin De Bruyne. You want a game where we're coming out talking about Mo Salah and what a wonderful forward he is and how he's shown he's one of the best players in the world, rather than, you know, Haaland. And we can create that situation together.
It is a bit of a time warp, this one, all of a sudden. Emma, I've mentioned that game there. There's all the games that do sort of spring to mind, going back at the last 20 years or so. John mentions previous games against Manchester City. The time warp is back to the spring of 2018, when City were on for a 100-point season. Liverpool are going to go and get to the Champions League final that season. But there's two games at Anfield. One's the 4-3, this one's the 3-0, where atmosphere plays its part, but also the idea of Liverpool get one and then Liverpool get two quick plays its part. And we're very concerned about us conceding first. I'll come back on to that. There's lots of comments about that. I'm concerned about us conceding first. But it is possible, I mean, it's theoretically possible, that we could score first. And if we score first, theoretically, I don't want to overstate it, you know, it has happened in the dim and distant past. Were we to score first, I think that opens up what happens for the 5 minutes after we score first. And that's maybe when there could be a bit of hay for Liverpool to make.
Yeah, I had a mini panic then that you were going to make me answer questions on things that happened 20 years ago, because I can't remember things that happened last week. But I fully agree with that. I think what we have seen in these big sort of rivalry type games, you know, that referenced before about it kind of feeling like the Liverpool Chelsea, I think the Liverpool City, absolutely, I would agree with that. It's that type of game, isn't it? And I think momentum is such a big thing in those games. And obviously the crowd, as you say, Gibbo, like it's all about that sort of emotion and feeling alive in the Anfield crowd. And I think that comes from those exciting bursts that you get from Liverpool. And I do think they are very unique. I don't think there's many teams out there in the world actually who have the ability to destroy a team in 10 minutes. And I think Liverpool have that, and they've shown that consistently under Jurgen Klopp. So if they can get 10 minutes, 10, 15 minutes of that real alive burst and the Anfield crowd really gets it and they get two quick goals, then who's to say that they can't go on and win it? I think the challenge there is if they were to take an early lead and they were to go 1 or 2-0 up, can they maintain that intensity? Can they maintain that sort of free-flowing football and not think, oh God, we're in the lead, let's, you know, sit back and make sure we don't concede? You almost want them to not be thinking too much about the fact that they have to defend really well, because I think when you think too hard about something, you almost go the other way and you lose focus on what you're trying to do. And when there's already so much pressure on doing the basics well defensively, it's almost like you kind of want to take a bit of distraction away from that. And I think if they can sort of ride that emotion and have these periods of pressure, because like you say, Gibber, I think absolutely City are going to have periods of pressure. And as long as Liverpool have theirs as well and make the most of them, then I think they can challenge.
There's a nice City fan in the comments who's chatting about the game in general. Seems perfectly pleasant, and he's just sort of pointing out that they're playing at Anfield. There's no way Guardiola's taking it lightly. City are going to be up for this. I think this is really important for Guardiola. Mm-hmm. He'll have it marked, and he's not going to change. This is our toughest Premier League away game of the season. I've been talking a bit on shows about the idea we need to remember we are the hunted, you know, and just because we feel as though we're weakened doesn't mean other teams don't. You got to see Arteta's reaction from the 3-2 against us after Liverpool basically give his team three gifts. That's not to say Arsenal didn't play well in general and aren't a good side, but we hand them three goals over the course of that game. His reaction is what will be in Guardiola's head. The idea of a win at Anfield in front of a crowd will be absolutely enormous for him and his players, and they'll be
they will not be taking it lightly in the slightest.
No, there's just no way Pep will ever let it get that far. We know how, I don't want to say obsessed with us, but we've been their closest rival for the past 5 years, and he will make sure that they don't come taking this game lightly at all, really. It'd be nice if they did, because it might give us a slight advantage. You never know what one or two of their players might be thinking come match day, but I'm sure the manager will be drumming into them from these beware the wounded animal, so to speak. We Liverpool are definitely not to be taken lightly. And I think he's right, really, because I think we will up our game for this match. I really expect us to sort of try and shake off the poor performances of recent weeks, and really put on try and give Man City and really fans us to do well. So I'm not expecting us to come out and sort of smash City 3-4-0, but I certainly think that we're going to be going to surprise a few. I think so, on Sunday, I think we'll definitely match them, and hopefully we can squeeze 3 points out of it.
Steve, the question then becomes, what team do you think he's picking? I'm intrigued. I think there's a system chat in there as well. I don't think it's just an idea of a selection chat. I expect, allowing for the fact that there's no injury news that we don't know about, Alisson in goal, Gomez starts, and then across the back four, it's then Canate, Van Dijk, and I think he will start Robertson. Do you think he'll start Robertson?
I hope so, yeah. I think he looked really sharp when he came on against Rangers Wednesday, as previously said. So hopefully, yeah, Robertson gets the game for me.
Everyone think he's going to start Robertson?
Yeah.
Okay, there's consensus around Robertson then. That's the back four. Then I think up front, I think Salah obviously definitely starts in that. I think Fabinho and Thiago will both start. Yeah. General agreement, yeah. John, Emma?
Agreed, yeah.
Okay, so we're getting somewhere. And then I think Firmino and Jota will both start. Do we both all think Firmino and Jota start?
I think Firmino, definitely. I'm not sure whether we'll go Nunes or Jota, because I can see him maybe just throwing in a bit of a spanner and putting Nunes out wide. But I think I'll go Jota.
It's a difficult one, isn't it? I think I'll pick Jota, and I think I'll pick Salah. And it's the centre forward position. Listen, Firmino is more informed, plays so well, but I don't know. Part of me thinks he might just go with Nunes in this one and nine, just for that bit of a wild card option. I think having someone up there who City haven't played against before, who apart from sort of 20 minutes in that Community Shield, know a bit less, and someone who's able to throw something at them that they maybe don't necessarily like or expect, must be a temptation for the manager. Listen, you can unleash him off the bench, can't you? But, if it goes badly, the game might be over by then. And so is that sort of what you want to do? I think he'll go free, and I think he'll go for me, because he's a more conservative manager than you think. But I don't know, I'd be tempted to not pick Firmino and go and pick Nunes.
There's also that element of, like, if you pick Firmino, then you know what you're getting in terms of the press. And when the press hasn't been working quite as well this season, defensively, it hasn't been working quite as well, I wouldn't be surprised if Klopp says, look, Firmino is the absolute engine of that press, and we know what he's going to give the team. So that's why I think he'll go with him personally.
What do you think he'll do, Steve?
Yeah, I think he starts Nunes myself. I think he mentioned today about getting Mo Salah closer to the goal, and these runs from the inside, obviously coming in from the inside of the box, and that's where he's best. So I think he'll want to sort of harness that sort of suggestion more, really. And so I think he'll probably go with a three up front again. I think he'll pick. I think it'd be nice to see a little curveball, maybe Nunes on the left wing. I'm not too sure, we haven't seen him there yet, and what sort of chaos that would cause. It's going to be a tough one. I think it's literally a flip of a coin when he goes with, really. It'd be a shame for Nunes not to play, because I think even though he's not doing everything brilliant all the time, he's certainly gathering momentum with his goals and scoring most games now. So it would be a shame for him not to play. But we all saw the chaos he caused when he came off the bench against Man City in the Charity Shield. So he might want to just try that again, really. So yeah, too close to call for me. I really don't know.
But you think you'll go 4-3-3?
Yes, I think so.
So what do you think his midfield three will be?
I think it'd be Henderson, Thiago, Fabinho.
Yeah, same.
See, I think that Elliot's got more of a shout at this than what I think he might pick Elliot off the basis of the fact that Elliot lets him flip between the systems. So we can go Elliot wide right, move Salah central, put Firmino in behind and have Jota or Nunez if he wants to be risky on the left. I think he'll go with Jota. And then it's 4-2-4 or 4-4-2 for a period. And then he can say to Elliot, right, we're now doing 15 minutes where you come back into centre mid. Salah, you go out wide. Firmino, you go back through the middle, and Jota and Salah, you go narrow. And we'll do that for a period. And I wondered if he wants the tactical flexibility in game.
Yeah.
And that's, but I think he can only have that if he picks Elliot. I don't think there's anyone else he can pick in centre mid where he can have that. But Elliot has a very good 45 there. And then he also then has both Nunez and Henderson as subs, which I think allow him to go in a couple of directions as well. But I could be wrong, could be completely wrong. But that's what I think he might.
I almost see that, but like from the reverse, I think when you've got Joe Gomez playing at right back, I would argue he'll probably start with Henderson just to help solidify it for the first 45, and then he's got that weapon of bringing on Harvey and changing things around.
My only thing on that though as well is that he's lost his triangle. If he wants to revert back even to last season, he's lost his triangle of Salah, Trent and Henderson anyway, because he can't pick Trent. So does he therefore think, well, if that can't work, do I want to do something else a little bit different? I think he has got loads of options. I think they're easier to predict. And that's a weird thing, because people often say, oh, Guardiola overthinks things. I think they're easier to predict than we are, both in every single way. Like, you can't name, I think we can have with certainty eight of the Liverpool players, but I don't think you can say any more. And also, I don't think that tells you what system it is, John.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, of the five subs who came on, you know, I've just started four of them. do you know what I mean? But then, you know, there's who of the team who started. And we're going to Rangers definitely isn't playing. I think you could only pick Carvalho, you'd be shocked if you threw him in for this one. I think the rest of them, you know, you either can make an argument or, in your case with Harvey Elliott, just have. And so I think, you know, it does make us a little bit more unpredictable. Obviously, the formation, we're all saying we think you'll go 4-3-3, but, you know, it wouldn't shock you to see something else. Or like you've just said, Neil, something that can go between the two. So it does make us a little bit more unpredictable. And also the ability to change in the game is important as well. But you need to stay in it and you need to be in the game first. As I said, you know, my worry about holding Nunez back is sometimes a little bit of a, well, if you're 3-1 down, what are you holding him back for? So I don't know, we'll see. I think he's got good options. I think, you know, we saw, you know, the quality off the bench last time and saw the quality that we have, but they've got so much as well. And that's what makes it a bit trickier, and that's what makes it tough, because you can't get it wrong. Do you know what I mean? The manager, it's not one of those games where you can, like, well, if it's not working at half time or on 60, you can change it. Yeah. They can blow us away in that time. And that's where the pressure comes from. And that's where I think he will have his tendency to go a little bit more conservative and maybe go with, you know, the likes of maybe Elliot and Nunez off the bench. You know, should or would we need them?
I think that's one thing that goes in our favour. For probably the first time since I can remember, that I probably Pep Guardiola hasn't got a clue how we're going to line up. Yeah. I think in the past, if you look at our squad, he always knows we're going to play Henderson, Thiago, Fabinho to fit. It's always been Mane, Salah and Firmino, or maybe Jota if fit as well. So I think for the first time for ages, that Pep must be sitting there going, I haven't got a clue how they're going to set up here. And that can only work in our favour, surely.
Okay, I'm going to ask everyone for predictions in a second or two. Before then, the following week, we will be at Nottingham Forest. Sorry, we won't be at Nottingham Forest. We will be at Kane's Brewery Pub in the Kane's Brewery Village for the Nottingham Forest game. We're going to do post-match pint there afterwards in front of an audience. And if people want to watch it, we'll be watching it in there for the 12:30 kickoff. And afterwards, we'll be downstairs in post-match pint. We'll do that in front of an audience, try and get some audience participation. It's an experiment. We're going to see if it works. It might not do. We're just trying something new. And then we'll have a bit of an Anfield Rap live show that won't be recorded afterwards, but post-match pint will. So if you want to come and join us, we will be in the Kane's Brewery Pub from 12 o'clock next Saturday against Nottingham Forest. Fact, would you take a draw?
Yeah, I think I would.
You taking a draw?
100% take a draw.
Steve, you taking a draw?
Reluctantly, yes.
I've asked everyone this. I'm not. And the reason why I'm not is I feel it's almost a bit like no matter what happens, I feel like everything's different on Monday no matter what. Like the serious business starts again. In a really weird way, this feels like a cup final, I think, because we know, like, we win 3-0, we're not going to all be coming out going, we're going to win the league. We just know we've had 3 points towards the top four push.
I don't think it'll be a draw, by the way.
The way I feel about it is that genuinely Monday mornings, if we win, I'm going to have a massive Sunday night, and then we wake up Monday morning and the serious business starts, because we've got to get something against West Ham, we've got to get something against Forest, we've got to get something against Ives, we've got to get something against Leeds. You've got to keep the season alive. And if we get beat,
you've got to get something against West Ham. You've got to get something against, you know what I mean? Like in seasons gone by, the would you take up the draw questions massively influenced by the league picture.
But we need to beat them too, because to get the points up and stuff like that.
You know, or we take the draw because we're currently too clear of them or something like that. Or, you know what I mean? For me, it's one more point if you take the draw in a top four push that's going to go on all the way realistically into the spring. That's where we want it to be. The only reason why I'd say yes to the would you take a draw comments is if you think you're going to get whacked. I don't want to get whacked, but a Liverpool performance where they're banging it and it finishes 3-2 to City, but we all get to wake up on Monday morning and say, you know what, that was a proper game of football. I'm all right with that. So I'm quite, you know, this is the manager in the press conference. The one interesting thing I thought he said was the game to the left and the game to the right doesn't matter for this game. And that's a really interesting way to look at it. And that's sort of where I am as well. So everyone has taken the draw. Everyone I've asked on different Anfield rap shows, everyone's taken the draw all the way through. I've been thinking, I wouldn't. And the reason why is, let's just throw the dice, play a game of footy. I'm really looking forward to it in a weird way, because I do. The only thing that can say, I just don't want to get whacked.
Yeah.
But, and Heaton's not taking a draw either in the private chat, his right hand. I just think, you know, taking a draw is thinking that you just don't want the feeling of getting beat by them walking out the ground. Well, guess what? You're going to get beat by them at Anfield at some point anyway. So let's just get out of the way if that's going to happen. But if not, I just think, imagine the alternative where we come out, it's the best Sunday night of your life, and then no matter what happens, it's serious business Monday morning, dead sober, just like really serious, straight down the microphone for us and for them, back to training. That's my attitude.
I'm loving this positivity.
Well, it's not really positivity. Like I am saying, we could get whacked. I mean, I want to be clear.
Yeah, I mean, to be pessimistic, that was sort of why I said I'd take a draw, because I just can't, I personally can't see anything other than a 2-3-0, 4-0 win to City. So yeah, that's why I'd take the draw.
Okay, that's more than allowed. It is more than allowed. Steve, give me a prediction. You're shaking your head.
I think we'll win. I've had a feeling all week that we're going to win, so I'm going to go 3-1 Liverpool.
John, what about this? I tell you what, 4-0, I'm going to say 4-0, whether you said it or not. 4-0, says Emma, to City. Steve, 3-1 to the Reds. Me, I'm just in it for the party. What's your prediction?
2-0.
So John gets the draw that he would have taken before. I think Guardiola and Klopp would take a draw on 70. If it's 2-0, I think they'll take a draw on 70, the two of them, which is interesting. And I might then as well. Ask me. I'll be in the ground, excited for it. It's great to watch good footballers. Liverpool's good footballers need to be great. That's the way in which this works. If Liverpool's good footballers are great, any result is possible. See you later. Sports Social Podcast Network.